Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Welcome to Ruination, the early years.
We are strapping in for another comprehensive deep dive, meticulously analyzing a crucial, chaotic, and just an utterly necessary pivot point in the Big Fatty online archives.
It really is.
This week captures a real moment of whiplash.
That's right. We are zeroing in on BFO episodes 93 through 96, covering Monday, June 9th through Friday, June 13th, 2008. And if you're tracking the lore, this is the week where the party, well, it ends. And the painful reality of the daily content grind just snaps right back into focus.
The mission this week is really to track that psychological and logistical collision. We are looking at the immediate, exhausted fallout from Gay Days 2008.
Yeah.
Where the emotional hangover and the physical chaos of a major trip collides head on with the demanding, rigid structure of BFO's daily publishing ritual.
He just has no time to recover at all.
None of them.
The contrast is palpable, and I think it defines the genius of his output. You have the host returning to Charleston completely wiped out after a week of being around in his work.
Oh, this is a great quote.
Homosexuals, and even worse, the podcast of Ballooers.
Right.
Only to instantly slam back into the relentless Monday to Friday content production schedule. There's no recovery time. The archives, they wait for no one.
And what keeps this whole volatile engine running, you know, what allows him to jump immediately from public spectacle back into the private fat cave, is that core, unwavering, defining philosophy.
Yeah.
Which is essentially his mission statement, repeated every single day.
That's the adhesive that holds the community together. It's the mantra we all know.
It's not just ruined, it's me, Big Fatty Online.
That simple phrase explains why the chaos is consumable.
Mm.
So let's unpack this chaotic coda and see how he transformed exhaustion into content.
We begin right with the Monday recap, where Big Fatty is clearly running on fumes, but, you know, he knows he owes the audience a full report.
He does.
He starts with the now legendary podcasting royalty tea.
This wasn't just a social gathering. This was an affirmation of his central place in this niche audio community.
Oh, absolutely.
Big Fatty made sure to detail the attendance, specifically shouting out listener Darren, who drove all the way down from the Gainesville area just to attend this tea.
That kind of dedication, driving hours for a single social event, it just shows you the intense gravity of these meetups.
It really does. And the headliner, of course, was the special guest, John Ang.
Okay, so we know Archer is the godfather of podcasting in this lore.
Right.
So Big Fatty officially designated Aang the great-grandfather of podcasting.
It's a marvelous piece of community-created hierarchy, you know, using these familial terms to establish who is important and why.
It really grounds the entire network history.
But the tea itself, it was apparently far less civilized than the name suggests.
Oh, yeah.
Big Fatty, with this, like, signature blend of pride and complaint, announced that he managed to contract SARS during the event.
And he even confirmed that pictures exist of this happening.
He did.
Now, SARS, in this context, it's obviously something like the sick and really snotty experience, not the actual global virus. But the casual use of such high-stakes terminology to describe common cold symptoms, it just captures the hyperbolic nature of BFO.
He's turning a mundane sickness into a spectacular, memorable event. He literally risked his health for the tea.
And immediately post-tea, things went from slightly sick to, well, outright chaotic.
Oh, yeah.
The hosts mentioned taking a group shot of everyone they could find, noting that some attendees had evidently soiled themselves.
It's an immediate descent into the bodily functions that BFO loves to explore.
The logistics of a personal crisis are key here. I mean, this requires an immediate solution, and they found it in the local economy.
Right.
The hosts needed to visit the Turret and Basin soap shop to acquire some sweet-smelling stuff to cover up the stench.
This is crucial because it links the chaotic outcome of the party directly to a specific local consumer transaction.
Exactly. They didn't just deal with it. They had a shopping trip about it.
The stench of ruination required a high-end solution, apparently. But moving from the chaotic tea party, Big Fatty then jumps to Sunday morning for what I consider a truly humbling, almost existential moment.
The wee reality check.
The wee reality check. You're right. Before heading to the pool party, Big Fatty and Larry Cly made a stop to visit Super B, Michael, Fairy Princess Holly, Taylor, and Rodan from the Pod is My Co-Pilot podcast.
And this is where Big Fatty had his very first encounter with the Nintendo Wii. It's 2008, so this is still, you know, cutting-edge consumer tech.
For sure.
And Big Fatty is about to use it for self-assessment.
And the machine showed absolutely no mercy. Big Fatty reported that the Wii, using its internal sensors and algorithms, immediately determined that he was both fat and old.
Think about the psychological impact of that. A machine, a piece of entertainment equipment, is digitally confirming the two facts he often jokes about, but which are, you know, clearly sensitive points.
It's the ultimate piece of unintentional automated self-deprecation.
But the machine wasn't done. The Wii selected the avatar for him, and it was none other than Miss Piggy.
So he's not just confirmed as fat and old. He is assigned a specific, iconic, oversized female caricature.
And Big Fatty shares this willingly. It's not a moment of shame. It's a moment of hilarious, structured humiliation.
He's saying, the world sees me this way, and even this piece of hardware confirms it. Now, let me tell you about it.
He certainly tried his hand at the system, proving his willingness to engage, even if his body wasn't cooperating.
Yeah, he did the hula hooping, the tightrope walking, and the skiing, which he admitted he wasn't real good at.
He did find some success with the soccer head button, which he described as getting hit in the head by the cleats.
So even his successes are framed as minor injuries.
This sets the stage perfectly for the main event, the pool party.
This was held at Ryan's house, along with his husband, Scott.
And Big Fatty noted that he just called him Ryan's husband for most of the weekend because, and this is a recurring feature of the BFO model.
He struggles with names.
He struggles with names. That difficulty is actually a crucial piece of the BFO content strategy, or, well, lack thereof.
It is. He prioritizes flow and storytelling over factual accuracy regarding minor players. We will circle back to that specific naming failure later, because the audience actually corrects him.
Oh, they do.
Ryan and Scott's house was clearly impressive. They had all the amenities, a pool out back, a hot tub, and a very specific Charbroil, Charmglow, Charroil grill.
The hosts had also prepared a big batch of margaritas, setting the mood for the afternoon.
This abundance led to the infamous gin disaster.
Big Fatty had brought his own bottle of gin and tonic, maybe sticking to his familiar drink, but since the margaritas were flowing freely.
And were clearly the drink of choice.
He never opened his gin bottle.
And then, when it was time to leave, exhausted, he forgot to take the gin with him.
It becomes an accidental, albeit generous, housewarming gift for Ryan and his husband.
It's a small financial loss that Big Fatty converts into a relatable, funny anecdote about being too tired to remember his own liquor.
He then detailed the menu, which sounded like classic backyard fare. Burgers, sausages, hot dogs, chicken fingers, and a pineapple casserole.
But the crucial detail here, the one that tells you exactly where Big Fatty's mind
is his calculated avoidance of the baked beans.
Why? Because he was afraid he might start farting it up, which he candidly admitted is the norm for Big Fatty.
This is the classic BFO move. Anticipating potential public bodily chaos and mitigating it, then reporting the mitigation strategy to the audience.
He fears his own body betraying him in a high-stakes social setting.
The party went late. From 2 in the afternoon until 10 at night, the guest list included Sam the Cowboy, the singing cowboy from the Magic Kingdom on Saturday.
And Big Fatty noted that Sam the Cowboy may have prompted some woodies. The environment is clearly spiraling away from polite society and into, well, genuine ruination.
And here is the peak moment of the anecdote, the one that ensures the story will be repeated endlessly.
Big Fatty shared a highly explicit anecdote about the hot tub later in the evening.
He recounted that the boys start taking off their pants and getting in the hot tub.
And the real kicker.
Big Fatty and his daughter Holly were just there, sitting, enjoying themselves, witnessing the spontaneous group nudity.
That complete lack of filter, allowing his own daughter to witness and absorb this chaotic environment, then sharing the story with his audience, is the very definition of BFO.
It's structured vulnerability taken to its maximum.
The journey home on Monday was understandably defined by exhaustion. Larry Cly was not happy about returning to Charleston after that kind of intensity.
But Big Fatty, ever the domestic master, had one last mandatory stop before the long drive was complete.
They stopped at the Millennium Mall with Super Bee and Fairy Princess Holly.
And the goal was extremely specific.
Getting a Checkers Check-fil-A, what they called a check ale, because Holly had never experienced one.
This stop encapsulates the entire trip's paradox. The high-end social chaos, the spontaneous nudity, the famous podcasters.
Immediately followed by the need for a specific, lowbrow drive-through fast food blend. It's the grounding mechanism that pulls him back to reality.
The contrast between the charbroil grill and the check ale is enormous, but both are essential parts of his life he shares with us.
And now, as is necessary in the BFO world, it is time for a segment we call Ruined Ruination,
where we dive into the specific factual discrepancies and self-corrections Big Fatty made during this high-velocity week of content.
This section focuses directly on Big Fatty's long-standing difficulty with names. We heard him default to generic labels like Ryan's husband or Jason's husband.
Right.
It is an intentional chaos that serves his delivery style. Mm. He's prioritizing narrative momentum over politeness.
And this is something we have to analyze deeply, because for any other professional host, calling a longtime listener or acquaintance by the wrong name throughout an entire weekend would be a disaster.
A complete disaster.
But for Big Fatty, it's just expected. He moves fast, and his memory for specifics is clearly porous when it comes to secondary characters.
The specific error that emerged this week, directly related to the pool party, was calling one of the guys Scott repeatedly throughout the entire weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He embedded this error into the initial reporting of the event.
But here's the magic of the BFO relationship. The correction came directly from the audience via a voicemail.
Yes, it did.
The guest called in, not to complain about being misnamed, but to clarify that his name was actually Will.
Right. Will Scott or Scott Will. The specifics remain slightly fuzzy even after the correction, but definitely Will, not Scott.
This correction is hugely significant because it demonstrates that his unfiltered, chaotic reporting style doesn't alienate the audience. It invites them in.
Exactly. He goes with what he thinks he heard, and the audience accepts that as part of the package, stepping up to fill the gaps in the lore.
They are not passive listeners. They are active fact checkers and co-creators of the show's mythology.
Will called in, genuinely grateful for the fun weekend, confirming the community's acceptance of the host's foibles.
His error transformed into a personal connection, deepening Will's participation in the BFO world. It's an example of the show being self-correcting, but only because the audience is so devoted.
And let's be honest, if Big Fatty spent time looking up names, correcting his archive, or ensuring every detail was perfect, he wouldn't be able to put out a show every day.
No way. The sloppiness is a necessary byproduct of the aggressive content schedule.
Exactly. He turns the reporting error, a basic failure of journalism, into a unique personal anecdote that he can then reference later. It's a strategy that guarantees engagement.
Now we move to the immediate aftermath of the trip, the structural return to daily hosting, starting with episode 93 on Tuesday, Juneteenth.
The transition from public exposure to private production is almost instantaneous.
The physical and mental exhaustion was paramount, and he used it as the opening note for the show. Big Fatty immediately told listeners how exhausted he and Larry Klei were after the long drive back.
And the week of being around the homosexuals, and even worse, the podcast of Palooers.
That phrase, framing the attendees as both homosexuals and podcast of Palooers, is key.
It is.
He's putting the social burden and the networking burden in the same category, suggesting the whole event, while necessary and appreciated, was draining in a very specific, slightly disruptive way.
But even through the fatigue, he was genuinely grateful. He managed to reiterate his thanks to everyone who showed hospitality, emphasizing that they truly made the trip special.
This is the essential balance. Complain about the exhaustion while validating the effort of the community.
He is back in the Fat Cave, his recording space, and he quickly established the environment for the listener.
Okay.
He was sitting in the special camisole, which he immediately clarified meant he was naked.
Of course. Why does he share this? It completely breaks down the barrier between host and listener. You are now privy to his exact state of undress while he records.
It's the ultimate expression of comfort and informality, but it immediately presented a structural challenge that every daily podcaster faces.
Environmental noise. The air conditioner noise was audible.
And Big Fatty delivered an absolute ultimatum to his audience, which is a glorious declaration of intent and a commitment to personal comfort over professional production quality.
He warned listeners, you better get effing used to it, because I ain't turning the B off to record a podcast.
This is where we need to push back slightly on the analysis. On one hand, yes, it's authentic. It says, I am recording this for you right now as a snapshot of my life.
But on the other hand, is this not just unprofessional laziness disguised as authenticity? Where does the line blur between being real and simply refusing to adhere to basic audio standards?
For the BFO audience, the line doesn't blur. It disappears.
Okay.
The professionalism is the commitment to his own comfort. If he turned off the AC and suffered, he wouldn't be authentic. the audible hiss of the AC becomes confirmation that the fat one is comfortable.
And therefore delivering real, unvarnished content. It's a feature, not a bug, of the BFO soundscape.
A fair point. It's the structural discipline of BFO.
The 20-minute show must happen, but it must happen on the host's terms. Naked, comfortable, and noisy. And to reestablish the structural routine after the chaos of Gay Days, the foundational segment, The Gays, returned after several weeks of absence.
The return of this segment signals that the BFO universe is back on its axis.
The guest was Mr. West, whom Big Fatty affectionately called one of the cutie patooties of the podcasting world.
And we got excellent geographical context here. West lives in University Heights, San Diego, slightly northeast of Hillcrest.
Which Big Fatty noted is actually featured in Wes's own podcast artwork. He always connects the person to the geography.
And here's where the Meta Network history comes in. Wes detailed his origin story, explaining he started listening to the Little Fatty Cast, the LFC, years ago.
But he almost quit immediately because the very first episode he heard only featured Mr. Vader and somewhat special Chris discussing Apple products.
Big Fatty wasn't even on it.
Imagine being turned off by the content because the central personality, the fat one, wasn't present. It confirms that the BFO network is entirely personality driven.
The content of two other people discussing tech simply wasn't enough.
But Wes stuck with it, and he said he started his own podcast, in fact, when the LFC sank.
This shows the transfer of loyalty. The community thrives by splintering off and creating secondary shows, all orbiting the central BFO personality.
Wes is now on episode 21 of his show, and he modestly calls his own work pieces of crap.
Which Big Fatty immediately contradicted, calling Wes's episodes entertaining.
Wes's quick observation that podcasting is a lot of hervin' hard work is a great internal acknowledgement of the immense effort Big Fatty puts into his daily output.
The conversation then pivoted to Wes's personal life. Big Fatty observed that Wes often sounded poopy due to dating issues.
His gentle, affectionate term for unhappy or dejected.
Big Fatty offered some genuinely philosophical advice. Enjoy being with oneself and friends. It's a surprisingly grounded moment of life coaching embedded in the chaos.
And as a way to establish connection and authority, Big Fatty shared some of his own San Diego memories.
He mentioned visiting Hamburger Mary's, but more interestingly, the Bathhouse Sex Club.
And crucially, he clarified, it was definitely not the Rainbow Road gift shop.
That qualification is essential. He's drawing a clear line in the sand for his specific San Diego listener base. He's saying, I know the serious adult venues, not just the tourist traps.
It's BFO providing essential geographical and social context, distinguishing between different venues to prove his cultural competence within the gay community he addresses.
Moving into BFO 94, Big Fatty continued the post-trip processing, starting with an apology for yawning during the recent shows.
Right.
He explained he was very, very tired, but recorded because he knew listeners wanted to know what was going on. Again, this is the performance of effort, reinforcing the bond with the audience.
He then ran down the list of people he had met or re-met. QCast, Michael, Jason, and Ryan and their husbands, who were delightful as well. And Super B and Fairy Princess Holly.
He specifically recalled meeting Super B and Holly face-to-face on Thursday night at Slough Dinner Theater.
Where Super B delivered the crucial piece of lore, calling him Big Buddy.
Big Buddy. That's an immediate, affectionate nickname that humanizes him outside of the Big Fatty moniker. It's a key piece of personal validation from a listener.
And he concluded this section by circling back to the pool party, reinforcing the most explicit moment.
He mentioned that some people at Ryan and Scott's house got to see the big testicles.
And using the slightly corrected name, he listed Will, Scott Will, as one of the people who got that unique, unsolicited view.
He doesn't bury the lead. The most boundary-pushing moments of the trip are the ones he most reliably shares with his audience.
The shock and awe is the hook. He knows exactly what content resonates and generates feedback.
Now we get into Thursday's episode, BFO 95, where we see Big Fatty actively manipulating language and leveraging intense listener interactions to deepen the definition of the BFO community.
This is where he starts building new lore immediately.
We have to start with the new vocabulary entry. Pinsky Pansky.
This is not just random slang. It is an instantly recognizable piece of essential BFO lore that came directly out of the post-trip experience.
The origin story perfectly captures the random inspiration that drives the show.
Larry Cly and Big Fatty saw a Penske rental truck barreling by them on the way back to Charleston, and the driver was apparently a hottie patty who looked kind of Swedish.
That rapid-fire set of observations, the brand of the truck, the attractiveness of the driver, the speculation about her nationality, all feeds in to the content mill.
And from this completely random visual cue, they decided that Pinsky Pansky would be the new term in Sweden for please take your pants off.
What's fascinating is that Big Fatty immediately put a call to action out to the audience, encouraging listeners to integrate the phrase Pinsky Pansky into their daily conversations.
He is not just creating content, he is crowdsourcing the Ruination lexicon. He wants the BFO vocabulary to bleed into the real lives of his listeners.
It's a brilliant engagement tactic. By asking them to use the phrase, he's essentially making them evangelists for the BFO brand, drawing a circle around those who are in on the joke.
Next, we dive into a segment that covers merchandise, physical appearance, and masculinity. It started with celebrating the 100th Caller Prize winner, Tim, from Terminally Single.
Who won a BFO t-shirt in size 2XL?
Big Fatty detailed the shirt. It says iHeartBigFattyOnline.com and features a picture of Big Fatty's head with a talking bubble that says, oh, Lord.
It's a classic, slightly lo-fi piece of personalized merch.
He then analyzed the image's proportionality, noting that the picture of his head on the shirt was actually larger than my actual head.
But was all in proportion with Tim, who is apparently a very big man.
This is a subtle moment of self-deprecating humor and direct connection with his plus-sized listeners. He's celebrating their shared physique through the medium of custom apparel.
The discussion of physical features then transitioned, courtesy of Rodan from Pot, is my co-pilot.
After meeting Big Fatty in person, Rodan asked if he had a landing strip, which Big Fatty recognized as referring to facial hair.
This question implied Big Fatty might have a hair problem, a judgment on his grooming.
And Big Fatty's response is essential BFO confidence. He noted he doesn't care about it.
He takes a potentially embarrassing physical observation and turns it into content, validating his self-acceptance and proving that his physical appearance is non-negotiable.
And speaking of things being distributed, Big Fatty confirmed he had handed out the 300 condoms that were sent to him by Sharon Fluitz.
This happened right in the restaurant during the Friday night dinner.
300 condoms handed out at a dinner. That captures the rowdy, explicit nature of these community gatherings.
They are not just meeting for a polite meal. They are meeting for an exchange of highly personalized and potentially functional merchandise.
British John tried to take two hands full of them, prompting Big Fatty to momentarily refuse, trying to make him put some back in the bag before ultimately relenting.
This micro moment of negotiation over the condoms perfectly captures the playful, semi-contentious relationship Big Fatty has with his inner circle.
Now for the critical domestic and financial updates, which are the grounding element of the show and provide necessary continuity after the intense trip.
Big Fatty confirmed that Sears had finally come out and fixed the washing machine.
A major victory for domestic sanity. After the entire saga of the wet underpants and the malfunctioning appliance, all underpants were finally cleansed since the trip.
This detail, the status of his personal laundry, matters deeply to the BFO audience. It's the return to normalcy confirmed by clean socks.
And then there was the Father's Day gift, which occurred on Sunday. His kids, Walt, Holly, and Nessa, gave him a fuzzy chocolate chip cookie card, a gift certificate to the Honey Baked Ham store.
Plus a coupon from the Sunday paper for an extra discount.
This is peak Big Fatty lore, and we must savor it. It's not just the thoughtful gift certificate for the ham, it's the added layer of extreme, relatable thriftiness.
The fact that the kids knew he would appreciate the gift certificate and the physical coupon from the Sunday paper. He noted how happy the fat one was about this efficiency.
It encapsulates his entire financial philosophy. Why pay full price for affection or food if you don't have to? He uses that detail to connect with his audience, who likely share that same frugality.
The whole thing transitioned into Big Fatty offering to be listeners' fatty daddy, noting they don't even have to buy him a ham.
It's the constant performance of affection and availability for his audience, wrapping up the domestic narrative with an emotional contract.
Finally, BFO 95 featured crucial voice letter validation, confirming the real-world impact of the trip. First, Jason in Orlando called in.
And he confirmed Big Fatty is just as fat as I was expecting, but made him feel very welcome.
That confirmation that the host lives up to the physical persona established by his name is essential validation. The audience demands reality. And Jason confirmed he got it.
But the truly defining moment, the one that proves the model works, is the call from Will, the listener Big Fatty had called Scott all weekend.
This is the moment where chaos converts a new follower.
Will identified himself as the blonde who saw the enormous testicles.
He called in specifically to say Big Fatty ruined him And now he's listening to the podcast, becoming a new dedicated listener.
This is the ultimate aha moment of the BFO brand. Will's shock and public humiliation, the witnessing of the unsolicited nudity, were the very things that converted him.
Converted him from a casual acquaintance into a dedicated, participating, name-correcting listener.
The shame, the boundary pushing, is the ultimate conversion strategy. He was so thoroughly shocked by the reality of the weekend that he had to engage further.
The structure of BFO provides the perfect funnel. The chaos happens in the real world, and the daily podcast is where they come to process the aftermath, correct the record, and become full members of the community.
We conclude the week with Friday, the 13th of June, 2008, Episode 96.
This show effectively puts a period on the previous week's chaos and shifts entirely into content preparation for the weekend and meticulous future logistical planning.
Big Fatty started by acknowledging the date, Friday the 13th.
He also addressed a sensitive piece of lore surrounding his daughter, Holly, calling him Daddy, noting that others, including implied Poodle McNoodle and perhaps Larry Cly, find it creepy.
That shows he's listening to the internal politics of his friend group and the external feedback from the audience.
He addresses the discomfort head on, not changing the behavior, but simply acknowledging that he knows it's a polarizing term within his circle.
He quickly pivoted to culinary ruination, offering a delicious dip recipe for a listener's hootenanny, his term for a social gathering or party.
It's a key piece of domestic advice, packaged specifically for his consumer audience.
This is the baked potato dip recipe, and he provided the ingredient list with that signature specificity that makes BFO recipes so memorable.
You need one can of cream of potato soup, 16 ounces of sour cream, and importantly, a jar or bag of real bacon bits.
No bacos.
That no bacos rule is the kind of specific low-stakes food snobbery that connects immediately with his listeners. He demands quality, even in a party dip.
Plus 2 cups of shredded cheddar, 1 bunch of thinly sliced green onions, using both green and white parts, and salt and pepper to taste.
The preparation instruction was beautifully simple. Stir it all together and serve it cold with celery sticks.
But this recipe immediately led to a piece of missing content lore.
He noted the dip would go well with onion pie, but Wes from San Diego, who provided the earlier segment, hadn't sent that recipe yet.
So even recipe sharing generates narrative conflict and future obligations for his guests.
Next, we have birthday wishes and aesthetic judgment. He wished British John a happy birthday on Friday the 13th, giving him the promised shout out.
And again, he wrapped that polite birthday wish in an explicit suggestion. Want to blow out the candle?
It's that constant, slightly raunchy layer of humor that defines the conversational style.
Then we get to the essential listener feedback clarification regarding his image. Kathy in South Dakota called in to correct Big Fatty's misunderstanding of her previous email.
This is crucial. Kathy clarified that she wanted to see more pictures of the fat one on the website, not fewer.
Big Fatty had apparently misinterpreted her request as a complaint. This correction is a profound validation of his physical persona.
It confirms his audience loves him and wants him in the spotlight, demanding more of the visual fat one.
It completely overturns any assumption that a host who discusses his weight should be demure about his image. His audience wants the full, unvarnished visual representation.
He then smoothly transitioned into West Coast trip logistics, detailing the next instance of ruining your city.
This trip was coming up 3 weeks from that Friday, the July 4th weekend.
He provided meticulous details for his schedule. San Francisco was first, from July 4th through the morning of July 10th, where he would be staying at the Bix Motor Lodge.
He's putting his exact hotel information out there for the world.
Then he moves to Palm Springs, staying at Helios from the afternoon of July 10th until the early morning of July 15th.
He reassured listeners that meetup plans were being handled by my people and would be announced later.
The specificity of announcing his accommodations and dates is extraordinary. It's an open invitation for listeners to track him down, meet him, or even share the same space.
It drives the ruining your city concept to its maximum logistical potential.
And listener Eric West from San Francisco called in, excited about the July visit, showing that the planning immediately generates audience participation and content, just as intended.
Finally, Big Fatty outlined the weekend content drivers to keep the audience engaged while he was off air. The primary driver was the cutline contest.
He planned to post 3 pictures, one Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday at noon Eastern for listeners to caption.
This is a brilliant, low-effort way to crowdsource humor and ensures the audience remains engaged with the website all weekend long, keeping traffic high and the community revolving around the content hub.
And he wrapped up the week with a bit of cultural commentary. a classic TV critique, sharing a list of the worst TV shows.
Number 3 was Yes, Dear. Number 2 was Homeboys in Outer Space. And number 1, the absolute worst.
A small wonder.
That list is a perfect piece of conversational bait for the weekend. It gives the audience something low stakes and opinionated to argue or agree with in the forums or in their own private lives.
It's the final piece of content structure that locks down the week.
If we synthesize this week, we see the absolute genius and paradox of Big Fatty Online in full, intense operation.
You have the incredible velocity of the Gay Days chaos, the contracting SARS, the Miss Piggy avatar, the unsolicited hot tub nudity.
Immediately slamming into the rigid discipline structure of BFO's daily production schedule.
It's the return of the gays, the 20-minute format, the precise logistics of Father's Day, complete with the honey-baked ham coupon discipline.
All that raw, explicit, real-world chaos is immediately channeled into a predictable, consumable framework. The structure enables the chaos.
The real power here, the lesson of this week, is the immediate content generation model.
Big Fatty converts every piece of potential real-world humiliation. Rodan's landing script comment, Will seeing the testicles, the confusion over his picture count, the AC noise into essential, foundational content.
And that drives listener loyalty and participation. He turns personal flaws and social mishaps into shared community lore.
The daily show structure, the fixed segments, the promised timing, they provide the security for the host to share absolutely unfiltered, boundary-pushing content.
Like the Pinsky-Pansky slang, or the specific ingredients for the baked potato dip.
Without that structure, it would just be noise. The structure makes the chaos profitable and consumable.
This raises an important question for you, the listener, to mull over as you consume media this week.
Big Fatty built an enduring community by consistently converting his most specific, intimate, and often embarrassing grievances.
A misunderstanding about a t-shirt picture, the proper way to make dip, an argument about the AC noise.
Into public, shared lore. What personal, almost trivial detail of your own life could you commit to sharing consistently and honestly to build a reliable, genuine connection with others?
That structured vulnerability is the essential key to ruination.
I'm Gail.
And I'm King. Tune in next weekend for the newest episode of Ruination, The Early Years.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, The Early Years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.